But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Cuffrey, you free state bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
So RTÉ have rolled into town this weekend, lads. The TG Cahir ploughing it along the whole way through, and then the big dog joins the party. And for the Tipperary quarterfinals, so RTÉ are showing club games at 3 o'clock on Saturday and at 5 o'clock. Be interesting to see how much interest is in them, Niall. Like, I mean, they're not too glamorous kind of slots. The 3 o'clock game and 5 o'clock game on Saturday for club games. First one is probably the standout game, is it? Clonalty versus Turles Sarsfields.
Yeah, they mightn't be the glamorous slots, Wooly, but I think they've picked a good place to start in Tipperary. And yeah, it's Turles Sarsfields and Clonalty in the first game. Like, Turles Sarsfields they'd be raging hot favourites for this one, really. They've romped through the group stages in Tipperary, and like, I suppose they're 4 years now without winning a county championship in Tipperary, which for Turles, they were four in a row before that. Like, that is a massive drought for them. Like, and like, it's not really a completely new look team or anything. Like, the main men are still there. Like, it's still Ronan Maher, Paddy Maher, Pa Burke, Dennis Maher, Aidan McCormack. But they have a few new lads in. There's Paddy Creedon. His son was the former, his father was the former Tipperary football manager, Peter Creedon.
Right, and Leash manager.
And Leash manager too. And there's a few other lads up from the B team, Jack Darby and a Shawnee Butler. So Clonalty will be up against it. They struggled in the group stages this year, so you would fancy Turles.
It's Kilruane McDonagh's versus Loughmore Castellini. That's the bigger one of the day, actually.
That's the big one, yeah. They met at the same stage last year in the quarterfinals, and Loughmore Castellini won by 4 points, and you'd probably expect the same again. Like, it's Loughmore, there's something about them. They just always seem to get the job done whenever they're expected to. Like, they win these sort of games, and they beat Killinall by 15 points last week. And I suppose a man to watch out for is Liam McGrath. He captained Tip to the All-Ireland Minor Football, remember, in 2011. He's back from Australia now. He was there for the last year or two, and he's been coming off the bench the last few games and like scoring points, like, and he's just slotted straight back in. So like, he's another huge addition to them, like for a lad that was missing last year, say.
Very good, that's interesting. He was obviously missing for Tip Seniors as well as that. On Sunday then we have TG Cahir are showing the Clare hurling quarterfinals. Jeez, they love the hurling. Cratlow are playing Ina Kilnamona. Pronounce that all right?
I told you this earlier. Well, it's Ina Kilnamona.
Ina Kilnamona. Right, they're showing that one. Cratlow are out of football, so they'll obviously be focusing on hurling now. They haven't won since 2014. They haven't really built since 2014. Pretty sure they made the Munster Club final that year, and you thought Cratlow were a coming team, and they haven't won a county title in Clare since then.
Yeah, like, it was similar to Loughmore and Tipperary. They won the double hurling and football, and yeah, they've lost two finals. I think it was 2018 and 2019. Like, they've been thereabouts. But maybe that was the thing, that the dual commitments was just, like, between the hurling and the football, a step too far. So this year that they're gone out of the football early, give the likes of Podge Collins, Conor Rich, I suppose they all play both.
A lot of them,
But they have good players, and that should be a good game as well.
I don't know about you, Lee, but I mean, when you see RTÉ coming in and doing the games on Saturday, do you think a Sunday game during club season, I've always said it, definitely during the provincial club matches, because I think they're massive. I think they're way undersold. Do you think there's an audience for like we do on a Monday, a club roundup, and they could pull in some of the scores, some of the goals, you know, from, because all the counties are streaming them now, that you could easily do a club roundup with one or two interesting stories from each game, you know, an hour long. And in fairness, TG Cahir do one on a Monday night. It's just purely highlight show, no major production done in it. Maybe it might be difficult to turn around on the Sunday night. I don't know. I just feel, do you think there's a market there for it?
Yeah, I definitely think there's an appetite for it, for sure, on a Sunday night to see, you know, especially if it's like your own club or a club near you. We can't always commit to choosing which match you want to see. So highlights and just even clips of the odd goal and a little bit of commentary to talk through what happened and what was going on. I think there's huge value in that, to be honest. But logistically, it might be a nightmare, because each of these counties, they sort of have their own streaming services. And then to get the rights for them, you'd have to deal with all of these companies like individually. and they may, you know, one company charge a little bit more for the footage and the other one's a little bit cheaper, and you got to deal with them scrambling it all together, throw it together and put it out. So they would have to throw a wee bit of weight behind the production, you know, to make sure that it's actually worth doing. But I definitely think it'd be worth doing.
Yeah, they're not short of staff anyway, RT. Some would say overstaffed, but look, I'm not going to get into all of that. The Leitrim Senior Football Final is on Sunday. That's the 3:45 game. I don't know why I'm interested in watching this. Like, it's early in the year, so we're getting to see it. You know, usually you wouldn't see the Leitrim Football County Final. Mo Hill are the reigning champions. They're looking for their fourth title in 7 years, and they're playing Sean O'Heslin's Ballinamore. There, that's the name of the club. So, like, I mean, it'll be interesting. It'll be at Ballinamore. Apparently, were no hopers at the start of the year, and they're in the final kind of as a surprise.
Yeah, I think we haven't seen the Leitrim County final. I don't think it's been on TG Cahir in a few years, like, so maybe that's the, there's a kind of a novelty to it. But I know down in Leitrim, they're expecting a real sort of a humdinger of a game here in this one. Mo Hill they're the reigning champions, and they're the favourites. Like, they're meant to have a very young and fast team, and Keith Byrne, who's one of Leitrim's main forwards, like, he is the main man and just a huge sort of target man and scores all around him for Mo Hill. And but Ballinamore, like, they've hammered their way through the knockout stages in Leitrim. They beat Glencar Manor Hamilton, who had beaten them in the county final the last time they were in it in 2019, and they bet them well in the quarter final. And then St Mary's, they beat in the semi final, gave them a good beating as well. And apparently they just have a great team spirit about them. There's two McGovern's brothers that are on the Leitrim team as well, and Tom Pryor is the main man up front to look out for. So yeah, it should be a good final, and looking forward to it.
Yeah, some very impressive football knowledge from you there, Niall, I have to say, for a hurling snob.
Well, I was chatting to a few lads from Leitrim last night. I had
you
to
must
do a
have
bit
a buddy
digging
in Leitrim there, or something like that, someone you went to college with. Austin Stacks versus Ken Mayer, as we know, that's the big one in the Kerry final. There's Mayo Championship in Mayo, but they're still in the group, so it's nothing major about that. Coola versus Ballyboden, that's the big one in the Dublin Senior Hurling Championship. It's hurling weekend in Dublin. What went on in Tyrone, Lee, on Monday night? Tramore, of course, beat Dungannon. 16 years since anyone's retained the Tyrone Club Championship. By far the most competitive. By far the most exciting, anyways, based on the last 2 years. Dungannon, that was their fifth extra time in a row. They obviously went four extra times last year and won it. And their first game this year went to extra time. You couldn't make this stuff up.
No, I mean, it's actually extraordinary, especially from Dungannon, when you consider the fact that in 2 years they haven't won a championship game in normal time. You know, it always goes to extra time. And then the final last year went to penalties against Trillick. But this game was just sensational. Like, you couldn't keep your eyes off it. It was quite like the Eden Dork and Killaling game, in that Dungannon Clark's got an early lead. Paul Donaghy and Paddy McNulty, you know, they were firing in goals and points from everywhere. And it looked like there actually could be a hammering on the cards here. Dromore, they just dug in deep. They brought on Owen McCusker, who was sensational. I think he had five from play. And despite being like a bit of a veteran, I think would be the nice way of putting it for Dromore.
He's 38, is he?
And then, you know, yeah, you think so, yeah. And then that took it, you know, till a draw, and then into extra time. And, like, you would never say that being in the preliminary round is an advantage, but Dromore haven't overcome Marlboro in the preliminary round in a very tight game where they beat them by just 2 points, I think it was. I think, you know, like, we talked last week about how in club championships in particular, you really build confidence with momentum and things. So I reckon they had that confidence just from, you know, already getting through a really nitty-gritty game that was tight right to the very end. Dungannon Clarks obviously did that all of last season, but that, just that having done it recently with Dromore, it definitely proved to be the difference.
Yeah, it definitely did. Owen McCusker, I think he's a cousin of Peter Canavan's. So like I was mentioning, it's the 16th season. Like, you can't say enough. Like, there seems to be nothing between about 8 or 9 teams in Tyrone, like, I mean, which is incredibly exciting for the championship. It has to be pointed out, since 2002, when Errigal Kieran won the Ulster Club, no Tyrone team has won it, and no Tyrone team has featured in the final except for 1 year where Oma were beaten. So, like, I mean, while it's very obvious it's a very exciting championship, is it fair to say, like, I mean, you know, they're not threats in Ulster, and the standard would be below Armagh, maybe below Derry, you know, below, and other Ulster counties, Monaghan.
Yeah, I'd say maybe it's like, it's more a case that all the talent is sort of split across the clubs a little bit more evenly than in other counties. And then the other thing is as well, because like it's so competitive and winning the Tyrone Championship is so important, and you would never underestimate that at the start of the season. You would never assume that because we'd won it the year before that we're definitely going to go forward this year and win it. You would just then, you don't actually consider the Ulster Championship at all until you're actually in it. Whilst like maybe a Cross McLean or someone, you know, they wouldn't go out and parade about it, but you know, they'd say they'd have club championships in terms of Ulster and All-Irelands even, you know, in their head quite early on. Maybe even Sláinte, you know, in recent years, they'd sort of be thinking, you know, that would be a target in the back of their heads. Well, just Tyrone football in general, you know, it's the be-all and end-all is the championship. It's the holy grail. And you probably will need a team to win a couple of them in a row before they start to build the momentum in Ulster.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, Niall. Like, I mean, it's so competitive. The idea that any of these teams will be thinking, right, we want to win this and we want to give Ulster a good rattle, they wouldn't be thinking that. And they're probably thrown out a week or two after winning it. And maybe that's why they're not. Maybe I was being a little bit quick to kind of rubbish the Tyrone championship there.
Yeah, well, 2002 is a long time back. Like, Lee is always going to fight for Tyrone, in fairness. Like, so maybe it is just a thing that they're just like they're so evenly matched and just lacking maybe a standout team. Like, that could be the reason that is.
Well, you see, the reason I'm saying that is because the Laois Championship obviously was dominated for so long by Port Laois. The Laois Championship now is really exciting. Like, there's four or five teams that could win it. Port Harlington probably the favourite. So Dempsey's could win it. Port Laois could win it. You know, Stradbally could even come in and, you know, and win it. But we have no Leinster club contenders. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, and that probably seems to be the way up in Tyrone too, like, where there's just, and that's why it's going from club to club every year, is that there's no club maybe just strong enough and good enough to hold the dominance and then to go on and compete in Ulster.
Yeah, no, exactly. A nice little story when Balahi beat Newbridge. That was Monday night. What's with the Monday night matches up in Ulster, Lee? It's such a weird night to have a championship match. Like, you wait all weekend and then it's not even on the Sunday night before you go back to work. It's definitely a strange one. I don't know if you have anything to say on that. But Declan Brown, he came on as a sub. He'd buried his father during that day. And, like, I mean, I saw clips of this. Balahi won the full-time whistle. Every player and every mentor on the field ran for him, which was I'm sure it was a nice moment for him.
Yeah, I mean, a really touching moment. And, like, you know, just the better parts of the GAA, really, and that sort of story. I mean, the courage that he would have had to take, and, you know, to come on that day and to try to think about something as like football, as unimportant as football, but on the moment it seems like the most important thing ever. I can only imagine what's going through his head, even to show up and talk out and do the warm-up and everything, especially given what he had gone through that morning. I think in terms of Derry and that match, I think that game was postponed. I'm not entirely sure. And so it had to be played on the Monday. I don't think that was, like, originally the plan. Don't know what the case was for Tyrone. It did seem like it was scheduled on the Monday, but I certainly wasn't complaining on Monday night, you know, when there was nothing to do and I could flick it on.
Yeah, well, you could have been watching the TG Carr highlights like I was. They're a nice little thing to watch 8 to 9 on the Monday night. Right, so Colm O'Donoghue, who's on the fixtures task committee, has crunched some numbers. And look, these are projections, so we don't know, but at least he's done it and he's explained how he's done it. He has calculated that the new league championship structure could earn the GAA 10 million in extra revenue. So that's basically 8 million could be generated by Central Council and 2 million across the provincials. Loads more games. He kind of based his numbers off Super 8's attendances and then kind of figured out what Division 1 attendances would be based off the Super 8's, and then went off league attendances, the average league attendances over the last 2 or 3 years, and he saw the percentage drop down in attendances, you know, based on the four divisions. They dropped 33% or something like that. So he worked back off that and he's modelled how much Croke Park can make. Look, I'm not saying it's perfect, but it's something. And, like, I mean, 10 million is not to be sniffed at. So if there's any reservations about this, right, players want it unanimously. Supporters unanimously want it. There's some dissenting voices, which is normal. They're not going to get agreement on every bloody GAA member. And GAA, county boards, will have more money trickling down. And the GAA are going to earn more money based on this, especially after coming out of the 2 years or after coming out of where they weren't making any bloody money. This is the greatest no-brainer I have ever seen in my whole life. Like, I mean, it doesn't make any sense that this wouldn't be voted in. You know, like, I mean, how many more people do you need to agree on this. Even Brian Fenton and the Dublin footballers are notorious for not really, you know, getting involved in this kind of thing. The usual response out of Dublin players would be, you know, I'm focusing on the football and, you know, we leave that to the people who are deciding at all that. Brian Fenton has said, I can't imagine the difficulty of having just two games in the championship in a season and then you're knocked out with all the preparation that goes into it. Like, Brian Fenton's not going to change his season that much. He'll get the seven championship games, you know, more or less anyways. Although it will change his season in that those seven championship games are bloody do or a lot of them are do or die, whereas maybe only the last two are do or die under the current system. But he's come out strongly in favour of it. Like, I mean, it doesn't make sense. The GPA has written to Congress delegates to try and move this on. Now, I'm not too sure if this is the widest move or whether they've kind of gone above the remit to be contacting delegates. And I'm not sure what kind of good it will be. So the reporting saying that they're urging that the delegates, they urge they pass Proposal B as a vote to determine the future structure of the Senior Football Championship. They cite far-reaching consequences of the vote. The GPF requested those with a vote back to back the league as a championship proposal. The delegates vote later this month. The GPSA will impact the development, growth and commitment of intercounty players and intercounty teams for years to come. Now, I'm not sure if it's a smart policy because we know the delegates vote, but they, like, if everything's going the way it should go, they're mandated by their county board. So there's a county board meeting. So I was ringing around different counties just to find out, you know, how what they're leaning towards on all of this. And the answer that I was getting was, you know, the ones I spoke to, look, we like the look of Plan B, but we have to have a meeting on it and we'll discuss at the meeting. So I suppose just contacting the delegate. You know, like, I mean, he's not supposed to vote the way he wants to vote. Would it not have been better to request an appearance at that county board meeting or request to meet each individual county board executive to explain all this to them, explain the finances to them, you know, do all that kind of thing? I'm not sure just sending a letter to the delegate, you know, delegates could go, who do they think they are?
Yeah, they came out with a statement about it and it kind of just seemed as if they wanted to be kind of seen to be doing something about it more.
Yeah,
more
politically so. It's not the smartest thing to do, I don't think.
I wouldn't say so, no. And the delegates kind of, it's kind of a frightening thing when you think about it, that the delegates, I know that maybe they would say they wouldn't, but the fact that they can go up to Congress and kind of just, it's a secret ballot and they can go their own way anyway, I suppose there's so many people backing the Proposal B, and as you went through it there, like, it kind of just seems a real win-win situation for everybody, like for players, supporters, for the GA. But I suppose you would just worry when it comes down to it, like whether the delegates maybe they go off on a solo run and kind of like the majority of delegates are kind of like men who have been there for a long time and they'd be traditionalists. Like, maybe that's generalising a small bit, but you just hope that there is the right outcome in the end.
Yeah, the way I think politically, it would be better to send a representation from the GPA down to that county board meeting or down to meet them and outline how it can benefit that county. Not outline, oh, this is the best thing for players, etc. What are you getting from that? Like, we've talked about this on the show before, Lee, like Pádraig Duffy did when he was getting the super rates over the line. That's what works. Go down there, tell them, what's in it for you? That's what they need explaining, and not the delegate, everybody that's in that meeting or the main influencers in that meeting, they need to know in that meeting, this is a great deal for us. 10 million, you know, like 10 million split 30 ways, you know, 300,000 each or whatever, you know, and that's, we're getting this straight into our game's development. I don't know. I think there's a better way of doing it than sending a delegate a letter, Lee. I don't know what your take on it is.
There definitely is. I mean, in terms of practically speaking, like going to the county boards and pitching it to them individually and way it benefits that county individually rather than treating it like a mass sort of operation, because, you know, people sort of get lost in that. But like, not to jump to their defense, but at least, I don't know, when every time I switch on or listen to a podcast about Plan B, everyone's all for it. Whenever we talk about it and the people we bring on, they're more or less, the support for it is huge. And it feels like every day we learn something new about it and something positive, something that makes more sense. And now, like today, you know, 10 million revenue extra. And then no matter what you hear, and you hear from all the pundits, all of the experts, former players, the managers, the GPA, from us, it's all positive and everyone wants to back it. But you hear absolutely nothing from the delegates themselves, and they're in that sort of little bubble, and they're the only bubble that matters. So I do sort of see trying to be proactive to try to penetrate that bubble and try to at least like evoke a response, at the very least, just a response, just to like a knock on the door, sort of like, hello, is anyone there? You know? So it feels like a little bit more, they're just fishing or really, really trying to force through something, like to get a dialogue at the very least, like bottom line, you know, that's the best we can sort of hope for, open and get them talking and seeing what the thought process is there. But ultimately, no, I don't think that'll work. They'll just ignore this ladder by and large.
Yeah, well, maybe. Yeah, at least they're being proactive. I suppose that is a positive. Podge Collins, who was at that GPA meeting, I think he said that at that GPA press conference, and he was talking about Friday night games. I don't know where Podge is coming out. He obviously says, I speak for myself completely on this. I'm glad he said that, because this has all been done. Like, I mean, this is nothing new. He says, I like the idea of it, but obviously it would have to be counties that are close to each other. You couldn't have a situation where lads would be missing out on work or on college as amateur players. That's where it's going to be an issue. This has been an issue before. So Leash played Carlow in a Friday night championship game. It went ahead. The Leash players didn't want to play it because they had to take days off. And this is only in Carlow. But, like, I mean, think of the preparation for a championship club match. You know, like, I mean, you have to get down there. You have to get your prep done. You have to, you have to have your head right. You know, do you need to be running around under pressure and work until 5 o'clock? You would need minimum half day to get off, be relaxed, get something to eat and all that kind of preparation that goes into it, Niall. So, like, players want minimum half day off, and that's with a neighbouring county. The GAA said we're not paying compensation because that would break our amateur status rules. The GPA said the players will not play Friday night games again on their own time. And they're right. Why would a game between Leash and Carlow are just generating thousands in revenue and the players are paying out of their own pocket for that game? So I think supporters would love Friday night lights games. I'd love them. Sometimes I think supporters get a little bit greedy on these things and go, because I would love, after work on a Friday, go to the pub, have two or three pints, go up, shout my county on in a championship game. Oh, God, be fat. Go back to the pub then after. What a night. It's not about them.
Yeah, like I think everyone likes the idea of a Friday night game. It's kind of the Friday night lights, and like, what else would you be doing? Like, you'd only love to go to a game. Maybe Podge Collins is looking down the line when he'll be a supporter in a few years' time. But it's just it's obviously, as you said, it's difficult. Even like, I don't remember the last time we even had a Friday night game as a club team. Like, and if we did have a game of a Friday night, like, it would be tough to kind of organise yourself. Like, you're kind of, like, most lads, I know people are saying that there's students and teachers, but like, they're still finishing 3 or 4 o'clock.
Yeah, there's commutes and traffic is terrible on a Friday getting back out of Dublin or wherever they're coming from.
Exactly, like, it's a long way down the road. And, like, for an inter-county game, sure, the preparation is kind of ramped up again, like, so that would even be more difficult, like, so
yeah.
No, I just think they tried it before and it just seems like a bit of a non-runner, like.
Yeah, and even, like, I mean, the Monday, that's why that Monday night club game between Dungannon and Dromore was lousy as well, Lee. Like, I mean, I don't think it's even best practice for clubs. Sometimes clubs have to do it because often the inter-county season has been so long, you're forced to play midweek championship games, but it's not ideal for anybody.
Well, our club in County Down, actually, as a whole, play football, or all our matches are on Friday nights. The whole league was on a Friday night. The championship goes to the draw, where it could be on a Friday, Saturday or a Sunday, just depending on the draw. For ourselves, it did work out that it'll be on a Friday. For a club, it's okay. The only thing is that, like, with championship in Down anyway, we go to like neutral venues, so they're quite often to like pitches and places you've never been to before. So you're finishing work at 5:30, and then you're rushing off, you know, the GPS in your phone, trying to, like, lost in the back end of nowhere, trying to find some pitch that you've never been to before, and then you're worried about being late and things like that. But I would say, I mean, I do much prefer that, and then having my Saturday and my Sunday to myself, and I think a lot of the boys at the club would say the same. Now, the Monday is, that's a different story entirely, because probably you've got work again the next morning, and then the morning after that as well. So it sort of, like, leaves you on a treadmill where you're just constantly always planning ahead for something. But yeah, for a county, the Friday's a no-go, really. I mean, if we, at a club, you know, in a junior level, you know, getting there and rushing and trying to sort out our work and stuff, I mean, I can't imagine what it'd be like for a county, you know, and the level of preparation that needs to go into that.
Yeah, you definitely need time off work. So I don't think that's a runner at all. It seems to be mixed, getting mixed in along with this championship structure, as in this is another feature of it. And that was never a part of that. I don't think it'll ever happen. Maybe it will. Who knows? Keith Ricken has been appointed as the Cork manager. He's an interesting fella, because everybody now listening to the show will have heard an interview from Keith Ricken. He's incredibly likeable. He's, sensible. A lot of the likability and the sensibility he has is surrounding the development of young lads and not pushing them and taking it easy on them, understanding them and all this kind of thing. And sometimes you listen to him, you go, Jesus, isn't he fantastic? So some part of me makes me wonder, Niall, is he fantastic at that level? Like, an understanding. And a lot of the time with underage teams, flogging them is not what you want to be doing. They're under enough pressure, you know, and they're socially and, you know, in their lives, and you get the best out of them, show them a bit of love. You know, will that approach work at senior at the county level? You know, like, I mean, I'll be watching with a lot of interest to see how this nice guy, very, very nice guy and, likeable fella, gets on at a very, very cutthroat level where you've got senior inter-county players who... You know, maybe you'll tell the tea and toast story, for example. Tell us the tea and toast story, the Keith Ricken tea and toast story.
Yeah, sure. Like Keith Ricken, he's obviously a bit of a storyteller. Any interview you've heard from him, he tells a story and has you engaged. But he told the Cork under-20s.
Oh, well, I'll get to start for it first. So Cork were losing the 2019 under-20 final by 9 points, just 11 minutes gone against Dublin. And their centre-back Sean Meehan, at the time, who we know kept David Clifford scoreless in the Munster final this year, he ran on to the team's goalkeeper, Josh O'Keefe, and he says, tea and toast. He said, tea and toast, next ball, right? And you can explain why he said this.
Yeah, well, he told this story to the he told them many stories to the Cork under-20s during the year, and this was a story that Keith Ricken, it was from a few years earlier. He was in hospital and he was getting a colonoscopy, and he was saying that after the colonoscopy he was absolutely starving, like he was starving in the hospital, and he'd seen beside him there was a cup of tea and a slice of toast. The toast had the works, had the butter, the marmalade, the jam, the whole shebang, and he was buzzing for it. But in came the wife and the kids, and sure, the kids seen the toast straight away, and they're like, "Daddy, we want the toast there." And sure, he let them have the toast, and so he was waiting in the hospital anyway. And the doctor comes in, and the doctor said to Keith Ricken, gave him a bit of bad news, said that he could have cancer, like, and. Just like, you know, like it was kind of silence in the room, and the doctor says, have you any questions? Like, and so Keith Ricken says to him, well, is there any chance I could get another slice of toast and a cup of tea? And like he said on the way home then that evening, the wife was like to him, like, why was that the first question that was on your mind? Like, would you not be asking, like, how am I going to get rid of this? Thankfully, he didn't have cancer in the end. But how are you going to get rid of this? What's the recovery or whatever? And he just said, well, that was the most important thing to me at that moment. And I suppose that was the point he made to the Cork under-20s, that the most important thing for you is the next thing you're going to do. And I suppose he was just delighted that the centre-back, I suppose he said he was delighted that the centre-back had listened to him and that they were focusing on that next ball.
Live in the moment, and this is the most important thing. I don't know, Lee, call me cynical, call me an old bollocks if you want, but like, I don't know if those type of little anecdotes and stories will work on, while for, you know, naive 19, 20-year-olds might listen to that and go, that's fantastic. You know, do you think that approach... I don't want to just hone in on one, you know, tea and toast story. I'm just using it as an example. Do you think that kind of thing would work at senior inter-county level?
Well, it's obviously only one aspect of his coaching. And like you say, he was the under-20 manager. So he'll have, like, them players coming through to the senior, like, that'll just speed up that transition a little bit more, because they obviously really respect him and appreciate him, and they know what they're going to be. They know what to expect, you know, playing under him. So that helps bleed them in that little bit quicker. So that can only be a benefit. In terms of senior managers and telling them analogies and stories, I don't know. I mean, like, is that an age thing? Is that not just down to the personality type? If you just respond to that kind of thing, that's just the way you are. And if you don't, like, if you're an old bollocks, like you, Willie, like you said. I'm only saying it because you said I was allowed to, so I took that advantage. So, like, and then, you know, that'll never change, you know. Like, I'm interested, like, what does work? Would you say, because you say you're the cynical type and you're the opposite of that. What works on you? Something really practical or hardline or?
Yeah, what? I don't know. What works on me is knowing your stuff, developing a very good game plan, being very hardworking, being able to answer any question any player throws to you, man-managing the players. You know, I think you get respect by being good. And you get respect by being sound as well. And that you can't pretend to be sound. That's you're either sound or you're not. Mm-hmm. You know, I think they're the two big things. And you develop a situation where players like you enough to go that extra mile because they know how much you're putting into it and they know how much you have them prepared. That will make them go, Jesus, we can't lose. You know, we can't lose. I think that's what makes a good manager. I think, I hope Keith Ricken, like I'm not saying anything against Keith Ricken. I don't know what he's like tactically. I know his under 20 teams play good football, but often, you know, that kind of comes naturally to them. I remember when I was underage, we played some great football. I wasn't coached. It was kind of whatever football you played. You're given that freedom and he's brilliant at that kind of stuff. Play your own game, you know, go out and express yourself. Whereas I think there's a little bit more at the cutthroat level of senior football than that. Maybe he has it. I'm not saying he doesn't. I'm saying I hope he does.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of inter-county managers that come through, like a lot of them come from the underage. And his CV is he's won an All-Ireland Under-20 with Cork and he's won a Sigerson Cup with CIT. Like, so it's obviously, like he's earned his chance, I think. And I'd say everyone is kind of looking forward to, because he is sort of different to your typical inter-county manager. Like I was listening to that, I was looking for that tea and toast story yesterday. He told it at a national coaching conference. And I was like, I went into the video and I was like, right, I'm just going to find this tea and toast story now and just get that in my head and see what the story was. But I went to the very start of the video and I just couldn't turn it off. Like, he started from the start and he had the audience in stitches,
right?
I'd say 5 times in the first 10 minutes. And I know you're like that kind of thing isn't going to work, but he's just such a sort of a likable fella. And as well as that, like, it's something sometimes we do say that inter-county, is it taking a little bit to maybe do some managers take it overboard, you know, with tactics and stuff like this? It's something different and maybe it's not an inter-county at the moment, but it'll be interesting to see if it works.
Yeah, definitely. He has Colm O'Neill in there too and James Lockery, who are recently retired players, so they'll be able to give him a little bit of coaching there, I'm sure. And Ray Keane is in there too, which is an interesting one. He is Peter Keane's brother. Recently he could get Peter in there too because he's a free agent. He managed Finbarrs to a county title in 2018, so he's well known in Cork as well. Ray Keane, not Roy Keane, Ray Keane is in the backroom team as well. So listen, wish Keith Ricken the best luck. Rory Gallagher, here's an interesting one. I never really understand this. So Rory Gallagher is in his last year of his contract. He's been given a new 3-year term, right? You know, like you see this in the Premier League where a player has 1 year left in the contract. They give him some improved terms and they hold on to him for 3 more years. But the whole idea from the player's point of view or the manager's point of view is those improved terms. Lock me down. From a GAA point of view, what's the point of this, Lee? I don't really get it. Like, I mean, his 3 years ends. You give him another 3 years. Why are they extending it in the middle of the term? Is it just to show commitment to him? I'm sure Rory Gallagher knows after the year he's had, you know, things are going fairly well. I don't know. I don't really see the point. Maybe it's just the optics that they want the world to see they're tying this man down for a long time.
Yeah, maybe. I know, like, you're talking about Premier League as an example and stuff. So, like, the reason, you know, that they extend contracts in a way that's so important and the club committing to a manager doing that is because then if they do decide to sack that manager, the severance pay is so huge, you know, afterwards. So, like, if you've committed, we've given Jurgen Klopp 5 years, and that means, you know, he'd be fairly, fairly safe because the club would have to pay all 5 years worth of work, you know, if they did decide to sack him. But that's obviously not the case in the GAA. So, I mean, yeah, it loses that sort of practical value behind it. But maybe it is a gesture of support. Maybe they're sort of taking advantage of the negative press around, like, Andy McEntee and things like that. And we're just sort of doing the opposite, being like, oh, well, we're going to publicly support our manager, you know, and keep that sort of good feeling and that little high that they had, you know, from such a successful league campaign and being competitive in the Ulster Championship and stuff against Donegal. It right in the middle of this Derry club season, you know, I don't know, maybe get the players thinking that he's still going to be the man in charge. I want to impress him. I don't know. I mean, yeah. It is nitpicking at this stage. I mean, it probably won't change a huge pile, but that could be the thinking behind it.
Yeah, change nothing. Like, Rory and the county board can walk out of this anytime they want. There's no such thing as contracts, really. Like, I mean, unless they're under the table contracts that nobody can actually see. This is called his term, extended his term by 3 years. It means nothing.
Sure, and Jack O'Connor another year on his contract. I don't think he paid too much attention to it.
That's it. Well, there you go. That sums up GA contracts, right? No hassle there. Andy McEntee obviously survived. You mentioned him. He got he got loads of votes, 46 and 27 again, something like that. And a big cheer went up when he survived. So I think that kind of saga has come to an end now. The chairman, John Kavanagh, has been, you know, fairly strong in his praise for Andy McEntee. That kind of is forgotten about now. I was tweeting, Brendan Cummins is coming up in part two of the show. Just Owl Lads still doing well for their clubs. And I was tweeting about this last Monday. And there's loads of them. We mentioned some of them on Monday's show. But a fella replied back and he told me about Tony Doran. Tony Doran's a well-known name in Wexford hurling. Even I've heard of it. Doran is a very well-known name. Tony Doran won an All-Ireland club in 1989 with Buffers Alley. He was 42. Played the full game. Scored 3 points. Won his last Leinster club title in 92 at 45 years. I had to check all this out because I didn't believe it. You know, and here's me giving 38-year-old Niall some sort of credit.
Yeah, like this man, like it, Tony Doran, as you said, is just sort of an iconic name. Like it's nearly like Christy Ring and Nicky Rackard. It's just kind of, you just hear lads talking about and how good he was. But yeah, like 40. I was listening actually to Tom Dempsey. He was on the podcast with Brian Carroll there, and he was just saying about Tony Doran and how he was just like a complete machine. Like I know he's a farmer, like he works as a farmer, and he's just a huge man, like a full forward with hands like shovels, and just lobbed the ball into Tony and he'll do the job. Like, but yeah, I was looking at the stats as well, and it was like he played 40 games for Wexford, scored 40 goals, played 30 years for his club, played 17 years for Wexford. Like, it's just
30 years for his club. I've heard hands like spades. What did you say? Hands like spades.
Hands,
you
know, like shovels.
Hands like shovels. You know what Cheddar calls it? He'd a hand like the bucket of a JCB, Cheddar, which I thought was going another step. Billy Sheen has added the Beano MacDonald to his backroom team. Billy Sheen is going down the kind of Glenn Ryan route. Let's try and pick, you know, hugely popular ex-players that have done a bit of coaching. Beano was in with the Laois Minors a couple of years ago. Beano's the most liked footballer maybe in the history of Laois football. So, like, I mean, it's brilliant from a Laois point of view to have him involved. Everybody likes him. Beano's an absolute gent and was the most skillful player that we've ever produced. It's just good to have him in there. It's good for the whole you know, the whole dynamic of it and the whole PR. I don't want to just say it's a PR move. It is brilliant as a PR move because, you know, because of his likability. And if Beano can, you know, show some of his tricks or talk to the lads about a little bit of movement, a few dummies and a little bit of forward play along with Chris. I haven't heard one negative comment about the new Laois management team, which is saying a lot in a county who love kind of to give out. Fermanagh footballer Ultan Kelm has joined the Aussie Rules team, Fremantle. They're over, I saw in the MGM in Australia when I was there, saw Fremantle playing. They were very good. They're over from Perth area, I'm fairly sure. He's with them next year. And to be honest with you, Ultan Kelm, I've seen a bit of him. Usually when you see Fermanagh, I don't know, they're always the most exciting games. But Fremantle showed a video clip of Ultan's best moments. And Jesus, he's a lot more dynamic than I kind of had him down for. He's a huge turn of pace. He's only 21 still. He was supposed to go in 2019 for trials, but the COVID thing, obviously, I don't know what he's going to Australia for. That's turned into a completely crazy, bonkers country. But the club highlighted that his time of 2.73 seconds for the 20-metre sprintly was one of the fastest times that have ever been done. Is this an Aussie Rules thing? There's no such thing as a 20-metre sprint time in GAA. Is there, or am I just showing my age here?
No, I don't think so. I wouldn't play at a level anyway that would highlight that. But in terms of the AFL and like Aussie Rules, they really put a lot of value into pace. And if you look at them and their builds, they're all very, as much as they pack on a lot of muscle, they're all so slim. You know, there's a runner's build to it. Even if you look at like Conor McKenna, since he's came home, you can tell he's not bulky. You can tell he's strong, but like it's such an athletic build. And I think they put a lot of value into pace, and because it's such an explosive sport, you know, that maybe times and things like that, and all these trials, I think they involve a lot of like testing, like beat tests and, you know, your sprint tests and how high you can jump and things like that. It's very NBA, American football, you know, in terms of their trials and stuff, like the actual, your physicality and what you can do even without the ball. They take all that, they put a lot of importance into that. But yeah, I mean, we're just hearing all these stories about players coming back from Australia. So this is one now going the other way, which obviously disappointing from a GAA fan's point of view, but you're never going to begrudge them, you know, taking the opportunity.
No, it's terrible news for Fermanagh. I think all those jump tests and all that, they're definitely in the GAA. I think for some reason it's in my head, it's a 60-metre sprint test that the GAA focus on. Maybe I'm open to correction on that. Last story of the day is Andy Moran. Remember I was telling you about Andy Moran, lads, here the last show. He loves to ask himself questions and answer them himself. Well, he's gone and done it again because I was listening to an interview of Andy. I'm calling him the new Brendan Rodgers. The GAA is Brendan Rodgers, if this interview is anything to go by. So he did an interview with Ocean FM. And in the first minute and 13 seconds that I'd listened to, he said he was chuffed. Who says that? He said he wanted to move the process forward. He called the job a project instead of a job. It's just a job. It's a tough job on my hands, not a tough project. And then, incredibly, he called the panel the playing staff. So I don't know, maybe he's been listening to too many Premier League games, and just when he kind of, yeah, I don't know, you know, it starts, these are all in his subconscious from listening to them so much, must watch a lot of soccer. And then when he's interviewed, these are just coming out of him, because I don't want to hear any of these. I don't want the panel to be called the playing staff ever. I never want to hear that again. It'll burn my ears. So you must be listening to Brendan Rodgers. And then in the next 20 seconds, after the minute and 13 seconds, I thought of the two of you when I was listening to this, because I told those two lads and they never heard this. He says, will there be mistakes along the way? Most certainly. Will there be fun doing them? There will be. Is it new territory for me, Austin? Of course it is. Three questions to himself, three answers. There you go, lads. So I'm recommending anyone to listen to that Andy Moran interview, and I'll be proved right all along. There's no need for you to be a bollocks like me, lads. I'll go out here on my own. We'll leave it there and we'll come back with Brendan Cummins. He's up next. All right, so I was tweeting on Monday about Owl Lads still doing it for their clubs. My next guest definitely fits into that category. 46 years young, still going strong for Ballybacon Grange. It's Brendan Cummins. Welcome to the show.
Well, honey, how's it going?
Not too bad. So, like, I mean, you saved three penalties in a shootout. That made all the headlines. What didn't make headlines is that you scored 10 points on top of that, and one of those points was from play. I know you're going to be modest here now, but that's fair all going in the one game.
Yeah, well, I suppose, yeah, in the second half of normal time, we played Arville Rovers, and they were conceding a few frees around our 65, and I come out and take the long-range free. So, as any free taker will tell you, there's some days when, no matter what way you hit them, they go over the bar, and thankfully for me and the club on Saturday, that was one of those. And the one from play, I suppose, the ball came in over the top. There was no one really near me, so I went off in the meander of a little bit of a solo run. Then I saw a bit of space in front of me. I went for it, and I just hit it as hard as I could, and to be honest with you, when I opened my eyes, it was sailing over the bar. So, look, there's days when it really goes far. You know that yourself in sport, and certainly last weekend in that relegation semi-final will go down as one of those for me, yeah.
I'm going to get on to you in a little while about goalkeeper scoring points, because I think this could be something that we'll see more of in the future in hurling. But, like, I mean, you're 46. Like, when are you planning on retiring? Like, is standing in the goals for you, who's used to playing outfield, like, you could go for another 10 years, not a bother to you?
Well, the plan, to be honest with you, is I want to... My young fella's 13, and the plan is to play with him. I played with my dad back in the day, so I'll have to hang in there for another few more years now, please God. But yeah, it's just the competition is what I like. The thoughts, can I still do it? I suppose the bar I set for myself and the standards I set for myself, can I keep doing them? And I suppose the key for me in the way I've continued on playing is the next 2 or 3 months, where I'll go back running the roads now in November, December and January, and make sure my body doesn't get lazy, we'll call it. And that's when the hamstring injuries and all those things that'll stop you playing long into your career. And of course, you touched on there, I play in the goals and in hurling, so it's not that physically taxing either. So if my body is somewhere right and the hamstrings hold up, we should be okay for another while anyway, yeah. Please God.
When did you go back into the goals? Because you played in the forwards for the club mostly, didn't you?
No, well, I played in the goals all the time. I think when I retired out of Tip in 2013, in 2014, I played out the field in that championship because I didn't want to play in the goals because I reckoned if I was going well in the goals, I'd have had a load of regrets about why did you leave Tip. So I said I'd play out the field for a year. It worked out okay, but the reality is like I mightn't score two goals, but I certainly might stop two. And that's the way we kind of balance it down here. And I still come out and hit the odd free here and there as well. So I'm still trying to contribute to the scoreboard as best I can. But all along, I think goalkeeping, I've always played in the goals, the odd venture out the field, but not in too long now.
Right, okay. But you were free taker maybe then, I suppose. Maybe that's what I was looking at. Talk to us about Ballybacon Grange then. You're in the intermediate championship. You won a junior championship. You made a junior Munster final, which he lost. You have a whole load of intermediate South Tipperary intermediate titles. I don't see you didn't win an actual Tip title. Maybe the North teams were too strong down the years.
Yeah, it was. I think I've 11 South divisional titles now at this stage in intermediate. We've gotten to two or three intermediate finals and just beaten by a pint one in particular in Upper Church. That AIB ad just drive everybody berserk, including myself by the time I was finished on it, as often as it was, talking about that game. So, but yeah, we our first ever adult championship county final we won was that junior title a number of years ago. And it was massive for us, really, not only just getting out of junior hurling, but just to win that first senior county title. And you'd be talking about old lads crying in the stand and all. We had the whole 9 yards that day above in Boherland, so it was fantastic. But to retain our status as intermediate was absolutely key, and thankfully Saturday that was the case.
Yeah, it was the case. Like, I mean, did it ever hold you back? Like, I mean, you're a South Tip hurler, you know, you're played a lot of football. You know, a lot of the teams underage, I suppose, from making county panels and everything, would have been, you know, from North Tip. Did it ever hold you back playing with the club you were with? Did you feel? Or how did you get your break, I suppose?
Well, I suppose how I got it was I got on under 14 Tony Forrestal team back in the day. Jim Lynch was a selector from inside in Care, and I suppose he saw something in me, and then I was in the pathway, we'll call it. So when I got to 16, sure, he was the goalie in 14, and then I got over in minor. I didn't play until I suppose I was 18 in minor under Father Tom Fogarty, and that went particularly well for me. So Father Tom then a couple of years later took over the senior team. So because I played well under him in minor, it just seemed that he was going to back me and he saw something in me. And I suppose you're right. You absolutely, if you're from a smaller club playing in a lower tier of adult hurling, you do need a few breaks. And certainly I can point to three or four along my career that gave me the opportunity to play at the highest level. And after that, then you either take it or you don't. And thankfully for a nice bit of it, I was able to take it.
Right, because I was thinking maybe, obviously Babs is the other famous ex-player from your club. I thought maybe he might have, you know, he'd be obviously well got. He might say, we have a good one in our club. Maybe he might have maybe paved the way for you in some way.
Yeah, well, he did actually for the senior hurling, in fairness, Babs, back in November 93, he rang and gave me the first start on the Tip senior hurling panel. So that was the game in Capoquin, played okay in that, lasted on the panel for a while, didn't go in training and just turned up for the matches. And, you know, that's kind of the way it was back then. So, yeah, he did give me an opportunity at senior level as well, to be fair to him. And then Father Tom, I suppose, came in after that and he then nailed the rest of it down for me, I suppose.
Right. I'm not going to get into the Babs thing because you've talked about that plenty of times and it's in your book and it's all there. You'll probably admit at this stage that the two of you probably, you know, I could write a book on falling out with managers, and there's usually one's not wrong and one's not right. There's usually a mix kind of between the two. Did it create tension in the club in Ballybacon Grange? Like, did people take sides, or is Babs too long gone?
Babs is maybe not too long gone. It probably did sting the generation of player that would have coached me coming up along, I suppose, and played with Babs. But they accepted too. At the end of the day, it's the manager's decision, whatever they want to do. And I know when the Stars and the Rice competitions are on above in the football club, Babs came down and he was judging for those, and there was an issue in the world. And he's obviously always very, very welcome down in our parish, because as a player and obviously as a manager, Tipperary, he's had brought huge success and certainly put Ballybacon Grange on the map. So there's huge respect to him for doing that as well, you know.
Yeah, and a dual player like yourself, I suppose that's just the South Tip thing.
Yeah, it is. There's a bit of that now. I don't think the dual player anymore at the elite inter-county stage is really a runner, to be honest with you. But certainly back then it was in Babs's time, and coming near the end of mine, I suppose I did have to make that decision that the footballers had to move on. suppose, without me, because I couldn't give the dedication that the rest of the panel were given. And look, that's fair enough. You know yourself, if you're in the dressing room 5 nights a week and this fella's only arriving on 2 and taking your place, your eyebrows are raised. It does affect morale. And, you know, since I had moved away, then Tip went on then again to under Declan Brown and all the lads to get stronger and stronger. That's just the way of the world.
So you scored this point in the relegation match, and you said you soloed up the field and you saw a bit of space. And we know, we see Patrick Horgan and these fellas going back to the 45 and sticking them over pretty much at their ease now. And you see in Gaelic football, Niall Morgan and Rory Beggan and these lads all venturing out the field. Like, do you think that's the next step for hurling, where the goalkeeper will be seen as a scorer and you'll be trying to find ways to free up, because you can only go 6-on-6 on a press. There's always, if the goalkeeper comes out, it's 7-on-6 no matter what way you look at it. Is that something hurling teams could potentially work on, is freeing up a goalkeeper and have goalkeepers practicing shots from playing in training? Or am I crazy?
I think they've already seen a bit of that in that now the back pass. So if you're under pressure at corner back, normally they'd hit it high up the line. Now they're looking out to the opposite wing around the 21, hoping the goalie will come out to take him out of jail. So I suppose there is a natural progression. But remember as well, in hurling, it only takes one to go wrong and then you're on bloopers for the rest of your life. And it's not a great look standing 35 yards from goal and the ball goes over your head into an empty net. So there is that. I know Stephen O'Keefe scored a point, but on the Gaelic grounds in the championship 1 year at Watford, when he came out the pitch and played a 1-2 and kept going. But I think it'd be extremely, extremely unusual at the elite level for somebody to get the point like that. And I was probably left go a little bit further than you'd normally let a goalkeeper go. And it's only, I suppose, when Arvo Rovers realised it was on, it was probably too late and I was after getting the shot away before the guy came in to try to block me.
Right. Because you see at the inter-county level, the goalies do come out, even from puckouts, they'll get the short one. The minute they get the return, they're like, OK, I've gained my 10 yards or whatever I'm after getting, this is being launched, and they'll get it to the edge of the box. And I'm thinking, geez, if you took another, you know, maybe 5 metres, that edge of the box could go over the bar.
Yeah, it could certainly. You know, there's no doubt, because if you look at the modern game, all the half-back lines want to sit between their own 65 and 45 or around the 45. So the key for a delivery of ball in is either play in front of them or you play over them to the back of them. So if you can go short to your goalkeeper, play a 1-2 and he can bomb it down to the edge of the D, half-back line are reversing on top of their full-back line, obviously gives the forwards an advantage coming out the other way. So there is that. There's no doubt that the game has completely evolved to retain a possession. I think back in 94 or 5, if Mick Ryan Upperchurch got the ball at corner back and hand-passed it back to me or struck it 20 yards back to me, the crowd behind me would go absolutely berserk. But nowadays, if a player doesn't do that, the groan comes because you're wasting possession and hitting it away without knowing where it's going to go. So that comes to the players being coached that bit better. It comes to them having an awareness of tactics, all that kind of stuff. And also goalkeepers know now that they're nearly like outfield players. Nicky Quaid plays out the field for the club.
Yeah.
Owen Murphy plays out the field for the club. So all those lads are as comfortable 70 yards in their own goal as they are on the edge of the square, which has helped the evolution of that as well.
Yeah, I think Davy Fitzgerald tried an outfield player in goals this year in the National League, and he'd be pushing boundaries. Like, could you see, say Patrick Horgan's in is going to retire and you have a situation where, you know, The Rock or one of the, Kieran Kingston comes up to him and says, give us one more year and we'll play you in the goals. You're brilliant distribution. You can score from serious range and you're a good fetcher. Now, he mightn't have the experience of shot stopping. I'm wondering how important would that be? Or could someone like Patrick Horgan give 1 year in the goals, or would that be a good move, do you think?
I'm not sure Collins would like this conversation, but I think he would.
It's a hypothetical situation.
There's more about to put Patrick Horgan to goals to court next year. There's no doubt that he has all of the ability to do it. I've no doubt about that. The only thing is that when the ball comes over the top, the instinctive goalkeeper will judge when they have to come off the line and when not.
Right.
And I think the key for any good goalkeeper is to not go chasing the game. The game comes to you. And what I find with outfield players who don't play that often in the goals, they come out the field chasing the game. And that causes mistakes, and they're not as conservative as they need to be. You look risky in the goals and everyone goes, oh my God, how did you do that? But when you look back at it and you go, well, the odds are really stacked in his favour as a goalie coming out there. Whereas an outfield player won't really be able to work out that risk and deal with it quickly enough, I think. So it is a big enough lead, while in your fantasy team, to be lovely to have him there because he ping balls over the bar from 100 yards.
Is that one thing mentally, Brendan, say you're in goals and you're doing nothing, you're bored, and like there is a ball that you could come for. Like, do you have to be very strong mentally to go, that's not the right one, even though you'd love to bloody go out and get involved in the game?
You would, of course. And like I always found it in early days, doors and games, if a ball was going wide and there was no one around, it was great to catch it and hit it out or take a touch and get involved in the game. But certainly that is, as I said earlier, the problem. Goalkeepers going chasing the game is a big enough issue. And that's when really, I suppose, that the problems come. So you're right. You have to be patient. You have to do one job at a time. Catch it first, then look at the delivery. Sometimes outfield players want to have a picture of the pitch in their head while the ball's coming in. That concentration goes under your legs and through your hands. So all those little things are what make up a goalkeeper. It is a really, really skilled and unique position. So while some lads will go in and give it a go in the highest pressure, more often than not, I think they'd crack and it wouldn't really work.
Right, okay. One thing you were a divil at was waving wide when the ball was gone over the bar, trying to tell the umpire that it was gone wide. Did it ever work? Did it ever work for you?
No, I'm afraid not. No, it wouldn't. And, the umpire would always look at you and kind of say, you're joking, because over the years you get to know the umpires, like, and first thing they say to you coming inside, stay inside the square. This is the first thing then, you know, and don't be waving it wide because I'll tell you if it's over the bar or not. You have a right out crack with them, like, you know, so it's like, I found that in the goals too. The umpires actually relaxed me because all of them were lovely fellas. They weren't like military lads on the sideline, on the posts. They'd have a chat with you if you wanted to talk to them. And I always felt they actually helped to relax me. But yeah, I waved a few wide, all right, that were all over the back.
But I suppose for an umpire in hurling especially, because, geez, I don't know how to do that job, Brendan, because it's so hard. Like, I mean, the ball's so small and it goes so high. You could put an element of doubt in their heads.
Yeah, there's no doubt, sure. It's a psychological game everywhere around the pitch. I mean, how many times have we come onto a pitch doing a warm-up and you see the opposition manager or your own manager going up to the ref going, oh, best of luck today. And, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, yeah. So it is going on all over the pitch. It's just the way it is. Hurling, football, whatever sport, it's an emotional game. And anything that you think will give you an edge or get you in the good books with some of the officials, you are obviously going to do that. And they have their own job to do too, and they understand the way it works. So, look, that's the swings and roundabouts of the way the thing goes.
So you're under 20 manager now. I'm sure you're delighted with that. I was reading some quotes from you when you retired. And even when you retired in 2013, you weren't ruling management out. Like, it's something that you've always wanted to do, is it?
Yeah, something I wanted to give a go at. And I've been involved with Laois and involved with Kerry over the last 5, 6, 7 years, I suppose, since I retired in 14. And I said, yeah, eventually I'll be able to hopefully get enough experience doing that to maybe do something. And the opportunity obviously came up with Tipperary. I was delighted to put my hat in the ring, and thankfully the county board said yes. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to now getting going in a few months' time, and we'll see what talent we have in Tip and try to develop it as best we can and help Colin Bonner and his senior squad whatever way we can.
Well, that's the thing. Have you talked to Colin? He was left field, and you had been in the mix for that job. I think you were down as favourite at one point.
Yeah, no, I was never going to be able to do the role. And if you look at Colin Bonner's CV, I mean, it's just absolutely fantastic. I mean, I know I've said it before, my one is my banished door. Line is probably not even a line, to be honest with you, whereas Colin is chapters on it. So he's got unbelievable experience coming into the role. He's got a fantastic background team behind him, there's no doubt about that. And I'm sure the players are here in Tipperary. You look at the first half of the game against Limerick last year. You look at a game against Waterford down the home straight, coming from so far back, they could nearly have snatched it. So the raw materials are certainly there for Colin and his managing team, and I'm sure he'll do everything in his power to get Tip back on the road again next year.
He's as upbeat as you are. You're saying, I think Tipperary hurling is in a great place. You know, during the summer there's been a lot of negativity about it, and you know, from the outside, the narrative about Tipperary is that transition, some lads need to go, young lads need to come in, this is a 3-year job. Colin Bonner's come in and said, Jesus, you know, I don't see it that way at all. I want to be, you know, hitting the ground running. There's great players there, and you seem to be on that same page.
Yeah, it is. I think, you know, kind of your own, and I suppose you're always going to obviously back your own as well. And I know Colin, with the experience, like I said, that he has, and the continuity that Tommy Dunn and all will give within the setup, it should seamlessly move on to his management. And he'll have his own style, different to Liam and all that, and that's exactly, you know, what's needed in every change of management, that there's fresh thoughts brought in, and Colin will bring that as well, you know. So, I mean, yeah, so I think we're all looking forward to it in Tipperary next year, especially after the great job that Liam Sheedy had done in winning at Ireland in his first of his 3 years there. So, look, the raw materials, you'd hope, would have to be there. And it's just a matter of getting a few breaks along the line and in these championship matches and hoping that you can win them and extend your summer.
That's the thing, because I suppose a lot of talk was about retirements. That's quieting down now, really, because like Brendan Maher retired pretty quickly. You'd imagine if anyone else was going to, they would have by now.
Yeah, it's hard to know. I mean, like in a vacuum when the manager wasn't there, speculation was going every direction, you know, to be honest with you. And that's always the way it's going to be when there's no inter-county games. But in fairness to the county board, they did their job nice and solid, nice and quietly, and got the man that they wanted after Liam obviously hadn't gone for the opportunity. So, look, it is, and it's all looking forward now. And in fairness, in Tip, we get going now in January next year. Hopefully it'll all be positive.
Yeah, exactly. One other thing I wanted to ask you, Alan Connolly's goal, I don't know if you saw it for Blackrock, where he charged the goalkeeper down. We were talking about it on Monday, and you see it a lot in soccer, where there's a back pass to the goalkeeper, the forward followed us in, and it's just a foot kind of a block. Alan, I'd never seen it in hurling before. I'm wondering, were you ever close to getting caught like that?
Well, for that point you're talking about the weekend, I'd say there was only about a half a yard between me and the guys hurling coming in to block me down. So it could have been on for a completely different reason. But yeah, but again, you see, a goalkeeper has got that choice then when someone's coming in. Do you dummy puck it and tap it over his head and take the chance? Now, yeah, it looks right cool if it works, but if it doesn't, I'll tell you, they're obviously in some mess then. But forwards, like you said, will put pressure on the goalie now going forward. It's going to be a tactic that all managers, I think, would probably look at across all areas of the game, that the best striker of the ball in a lot of cases is the goalie. So why not put the most pressure on him so he has to pass it off quickly? And you're right, not giving this guy a free strike is going to become common practice, I think, in our game going forward.
It's mad, really, how it's changed, Brendan, from when you were playing. Like, I mean, you pulled off some spectacular saves. Like, I mean, you're probably the best at it. Owen Murphy, probably the best at it now. But how much analysis, sure, you know yourself from the Sunday game, like nearly the main analysis is on puckouts, you know, now, and the goalkeepers and what they're doing. Like, it's incredible how the goalkeeper position has evolved and become such a massive part of it.
It has. Look, there's no doubt. I mean, teams will have their different strategies and tactics. And I think when you have a guy who's got a free puck of the ball, retention of possession is absolutely key. So if you can make it 70-30, you'll never make it 100% unless you're flicking it to the corner back, and that can be fraught with danger, obviously, and you're running up the pitch as well. But if you're hitting the ball any more than 70, 80 yards, if you can get it 70-30, that's a massive win and a huge advantage. So that movement off the ball, the high behind cameras, the tactics and all the signals, all that kind of stuff is all now game. And you're right, like, I mean, players have an awful lot of information to take on board and to remember in the heat. You or me, it was nearly a puck fodder competition back in the 90s and into the 2000s, close your eyes and let it off. Whereas as it evolved with Eamon O'Shea, I had to remember where the ball was supposed to go. So there is, and I credit to the players, the current players, like, they take all that on board seamlessly, to be fair. There's never an issue with any goalkeeper I've been dealing with to say, this is what we're trying to do. Okay, I remember that. And they just go out and execute it. So credit to them and that they're learning the game all the time and there's more stuff coming at them.
It nearly has had a knock-on effect on the whole way hurling is being played, because years ago when you'd puck it long, a forward is waiting for a break off someone and they get a lot of their scores just, you know, cutting across and the ball had popped to them and it's over the bar. Now, because when it goes short, the movement in there has completely changed, because you don't get your points, those handy knockdowns anymore. You have to actually win the ball out in front. Like, goalkeepers have actually, the puck outs changing has pretty much changed the game of hurling.
It has, you know, and I think also as well, you have the stats guys and all who are trying to get you for retained possession stats and all that. So yeah, the last thing you want, I think, is a player going in at half time and you've had seven touches of the ball and you've given it away six times and someone will tell you that 4 points came from that or something. So that's the last conversation you want. So they've gone safer in the way they deliver the ball, but then the guy receiving the ball has become more dynamic, I suppose, in that they know they're not going to get the pass unless they make the perfect right run.
Yeah.
So the game has turned into a more of a game of movement. You know, I don't know, is it handball they have where you can't run when you have the ball in your hand, but everyone else is moving around you. And netball, sorry. And that's, you know, it's a little bit similar to that. The movement off the ball is crazy now, the way they're going, and the fitness levels are absolutely through the roof. The runs, I see Aaron Galland, the All-Ireland final, makes 15 or 20 runs a half, only get on the ball maybe three times, but he's running to make space for others. He's trying to get on the ball himself. So all that stuff is playing into the strength and conditioning and fitness these lads are putting in as well off the pitch.
Yeah, it's fantastic. There, before I let you go, not many people listening will know you were a huge mentor to me in my earlier career as you gave me lifts up to Dublin for those compromised rules trials.
We did. Yeah, when you were running fitness tests above there in that hotel. I think you made the cut that time, did you? I got the heave-ho.
I made the cut. I don't like to brag about that though, Brendan. I'm very quiet about making that cut.
All I'm thinking is that if I didn't give you a lift up, they'd have had one more forward slot and I could have got in the ruthless streak today with a lift chin Port Leash. But anyway, look, the sportsman in me brought you up.
Brendan, thanks very much. I appreciate you taking the call.
No problem at all.
Yeah, great stuff from Brendan Cummins there. I'd forgotten I made the panel and he didn't, so I probably shouldn't have been insensitive and bring that up. Anyways, listen, that's always time for. We will be back on Monday. We'll do our club roundup as usual. We might talk to somebody from the weekend as well. We talk to you all then. Good luck.
No such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do?
No, we don't.
A donkey eat and a donkey eat a palate. There's nothing else to eat.
He was massive. Legs, ass, built. But I burst out laughing watching him.